This week's Sedra, Parshas Bamidbar, again sponsored by the Weinblatts, Liuli Nishmas Yaakov Yitzchak Rav Chaim. It's also will be Lerfua Shleima to the Rosh Yeshiva of Tel's Chaim Yaakov ben Chasya Miriam. The beginning of the Sedra, we have the accounting of Bnei Yisrael. Pasuk says, Ach es matei Levi lo sifkod. The tribe of Levi was not counted with the rest of Klal Yisrael. They're separate counting. So Rashi says, "Kedai hu ligyon shel melech liyos nimne levado." Rashi says that the Shevet Levi, they're special, they're the legion of the king, and so therefore they should be counted by themselves. So as we and always ask what's bothering Rashi. This one is an easy one. You know, why is Rashi after what's bothering him? Bothering him, we said, why was Shevet Levi singled out to be counted by themselves and not with everybody else? So he explains, because they were the legion of the Melech. However, Rashi then says, Davar Acher, he gives another explanation. He says, Safa Kadosh Baruch Hu Shatida Lamod Gzera Shel Kol Nimnin Mi Ben Esrim Shana Umala Shiyamut to be Bamidbar. That Rashi saw the HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw the future, that in the future there's going to be a gzera of Bnei Israel, that they're going to have to die out in the Midbar. Everybody that's over the age of 20 are going to have to die in the Midbar. And therefore Hashem said, Amar, al yu elu bichlal, lefi shehem sheli. I don't want these people, Shevet Levi, to be included in that gzera, shelo tau be'egel, their minds, since they didn't serve in the egel. And therefore, in order, if they would be accounted with everybody else, they'd be part of the whole klal here. And then, when the gzera comes to fruition later on, and they die in the midbar, they would have to die also, because they'd be part of the people. And therefore, to separate them, as Shem said over here, that they should be counted separately. So we can ask, also, when one learns Rashi, and Rashi brings a couple of different ideas, a couple of pshats, we can ask what was wrong with the first idea, what was missing that he needed to bring the second idea. So the simple pshat they give over here is that first, why Rashi explains why they were counted separately, but then he was bothering Rashi again, is okay, why they were counted separately, why were they counted at a different age? They were counted from 1 month and on, whereas everybody else counted from the age of 20. So on that he answers, because the gzera is going to be for all those 20 and older, and therefore he wants to separate them, but not only by counting them separately, but by starting them at a different age. So they wouldn't be part of that gzera in the midbar of all those 20 and older they're going to die. And therefore they would, they're separate, they're counted by 1 month. However, I was thinking perhaps to another idea of why Rashi has to bring the second tam, why they're counted separately. And that is that, okay, wonderful, Shevet Levi, they're special, Ligyon Shel Melech, 100%. And therefore, perhaps, yes, they deserve to be counted by themselves because of their greatness. However, being counted separately is not such a simple thing. Separating oneself from the rest of Klal Yisrael and being an entity of your own is generally not looked upon as a positive act. And the Svarim HaKadoshim bring this down in many different places, different ideas of how it's very important to be a one solid unit, not to be separated, whether it be individual, whether it be groups. It's not good to be alone or be out of the group. It's very important to be part of the tzibur. One place we find this with the Isha Shunamis, Chaim Shmulevitz brings in Sichos Musar, famous idea. He says that the Isha Shunamis was with Elisha Navi. And the Pasuk says, Hayesh Tavar Lach El HaMelech. And Chazal tells us, the Zohar tells us, that when did Elisha say this to the Isha? Do you have something to the king? He was referring to the king being Kosh Baruch Hu. And this was on Rosh Hashanah. It was at Rosh Hashanah. Elisha approached this woman and said, "What would you like? I'm a Navi. I have connections with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And it's Rosh Hashanah when you're supposed to ask for things. What would you like?" So what was the woman's response? "Besoch ami anochi yoshavis." You know what I want? Nothing. I want to be part of the klal. B'toch ami, amongst my nation, I want to sit. I don't want to be singled out. Don't single me out. Don't say, oh, this woman, what? No, I just want to be like everybody else. Like we said, once a person separates himself, then first of all, they bring down you're looked upon, you're scrutinized, because you're different, you're out of the klal, plus you don't have the schus of the klal that come along with being part of the klal, and therefore it's not, generally not a good thing to be separated from the tzibur. And therefore, the woman said, although it's a great thing, you think, wow, the Navi, I can ask for anything, yeah, what connections? But it's not worth it. It's better just to be B'toch Ami Anochi Yashavas. I saw once, I can't remember which Gadol, but it was once one of the glory, could be of Yecheskel Levinstein, remember, that he was nohag on Rosh Hashanah not to get an Aliyah. Even though he was Hashra, they'll call him up for Aliyah every Shabbos, whatever, but he said he didn't want to be called up for Aliyah Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because he said the same thing. Ad kedei kach, to such an extent, he doesn't want to separate him, he doesn't want to be called up. Oh, his name called up, it comes up to the Torah for Aliyah. You know, everybody's fighting for Aliyah. He said, no, I don't, because I want to be B'toch Ami Anochi Yashav. I want to just be with everybody. I don't want to be singled out, especially in Yom Hadin. I want to be like everybody. Bring a mashal, this idea of being part of the klal. It was once a test that was given in university. Your test. So they have in college these something called a proctor, right? A person, he's not the teacher, this, he comes in just to watch over the students to make sure they don't cheat or whatever, be in charge of the test. And he gives out the test. And so there was one such test. And the proctor came in, handed out everybody the things, the test to do, and he gave him the time limit. He says, okay, you have 2 hours to do the test, etc. And he warned them beforehand. He said, 2 hour test. When I say it's the time's up, you have to return, everybody has to turn in their test. Anybody who doesn't turn in at the right time, I'm going to, puzzle it, zero. Fine. So, time goes by, 2 hours are over. He says, okay, everybody put their pens down. The test is over, coming around to collect your tests. He comes to collecting and whatever. And one guy's sitting there, ignoring all the, he's writing. So he's collecting all the tests, and he sees them. He says, hey, test's over. He just ignores them, he keeps writing. Okay, so he goes, collects the tests, puts a little pile like on his desk, and the guy's still sitting there, filling out it, doing the test. So the guy's just waiting for him, So a few minutes later, the guy comes up with smiling with the test in his hand. He goes, okay, I'm finished. He goes, yeah, you're finished. You're right, you're finished. Forget it, I'm taking your test. I told you it's 2 hours over, and you didn't listen. So forget it, I'm taking your test. So the young man says to the proctor, he says, do you know who I am? So the proctor says, no. He says, but frankly, he says, I don't care. I don't care who you are. I don't care. Two hours, like that. No, finished. So he said to him, do you know who my father is? He says, no, I don't know who your father is either. I don't know who you are. I don't know who your father is. And I don't care. I don't care if your father's the president of the United States. I said, I have 2 hours, 2 hours, and that's it. So your test is puzzled. Forget it. So the young man says, okay, let me get this straight. He says, you don't know who I am, and you don't know who my father is? And he says, yeah. He says, oh, good. So he takes the test. The pile of the other tests are sitting on the desk. He quickly opens it up, sticks his in, closes it, goes, have a good day. So that's being part of the klal, as we see, is important. It can save you in many ways. We're coming towards Shavuos rapidly, a week before Shavuos, and we find this concept of the klal by Shavuos as well, Matan Torah. It says in the Pasuk, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. So Chazal point out, why does it say Vayichan singular? It should be Vayachanu. Klal Yisrael were under by Har Sinai. Why does it say singular? So is the famous Rashi to tell us Ke'ish Echad Belev Echad, that they encamped there under Har Sinai. They were one man with one heart. They were like one man without their, so united that they were like one. And the Orachaim HaKadosh says that this was the main prerequisite for Kabbalah Satorah. That here they're going to be Kabbalah the Torah, one of the biggest days in the history of the world. So prerequisite is they have to have achdus. There has to be this ish echad b'lev echad. And in fact, also the Or HaChaim says on the pasuk v'yanu kol ha'am yachdav v'yamru kol asher dibir Hashem naaseh, that they answered yachdav. The Or HaChaim, what does it mean yachdav? Together. Okay, they answered. What do you mean? Why do they have to say together? He said because they were so together, said that you couldn't, every single voice, not that one said a little bit higher, a little bit lower, a little bit slower, a little faster. Everyone was mamish, such shleimus of achdus that when they said naaseh, it was together mamish. That they reached such a high level of achdus, which as we said, was had to have it before Kabbalah Satorah. Rav Nisim Yagen says a cute idea. He says, "What's this ish echad?" Right? There are like there were ish echad b'leiv. What's ish echad? He said, "An ish, a person, is made up of a number of organs." He says, "But every organ has its job to do, and you never find, let's say, the nose complaining and saying, hey, it's not fair. I'm jealous of the eyes, right? How could the how come I can't see?" Then you don't find a nose saying that, you know, that's not fair, the eyes can see and I can't. And or the eyes, as it say, oh, it's not fair, I want to hear like you, he says to the ears. No. Why? Because everybody has every organ has its job. That's its tafkid, and nothing to be jealous about. What are you jealous about? This the other organ is what it has to do. You do what you have to do and finish. So too, that's called ish echad, and nobody's jealous of everybody else, what he's doing, what everybody understands that they have a tafkid in the world, Hashem gave them, and everybody's together, in it together as one. Saw a nice vort from the Rebbe Mibels, the Sar Shalom. It's interesting here, Ara, which I'm sure bothers you every week, and that is, on Mondays and Thursdays, when we read the Torah, so before we put the Torah back, the chazan says, some yehi ratzons, right? Yehi ratzon, milifnei avinu shev shamayim, lachon es beis chayinu, lachim es chayinu, etc. So, you notice there's like four of them, yehi ratzon, milifnei avinu shamayim. And then, the fifth one is, achenu kol beis Yisrael, nesuni mitzar Hashem. So he asked a very obvious question, which I'm sure bothered you all, is why doesn't the last one start with yehi ratzon? Each one starts. Yiratzam, Yilifnei Avinu Shem Shemayim. Yiratzam, Yishem Shemayim. The last one could have also said, Yiratzam, Yilifnei Avinu Shemayim, Shachenu, Kol Beis Yisrael, and Sunni Mitzar. It could also start that way. Why doesn't it? So he says, because what does it say? Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael. He says, when Yiratzam is, may it be your will. We're asking Hashem, may it be your will, may it be your will. If we're in a matzav of Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael, that everybody's together with Achdus, we don't have to ask Hashem, may it be your will to help. Then automatically Hashem will help us. Because the achdus is such an important factor that we don't even have to ask Hashem that it should be His will to help us. He'll do His will automatically when we have this achdus. So therefore, to answer the question that we started with, why did Rashi have to bring a second pshat? So now we could perhaps say that, again, first pshat, the Sheva Levi was separated in the count because they're special. But we said, but there's a downside. Being separated, we just saw, is not a good thing. It's a good thing to be part of the Chol, not to be separated. It's dangerous to be a separate entity. And therefore, bothered Rashi was, so why were they, in fact, separated out and then counted? Okay, very nice, they're special, but special or not, we saw, it's still kedai to be part of the Chol. So therefore Rashi says, because here is different. Even though normally, most of the time it is good to be part of the Klal, but here says Rashi, here would have been detrimental. Because had they been part of the Klal over here, in this specific account, specifically here, it would have meant that they would have been with the Klal when it comes also to the punishment of dying in the desert, and Hashem wanted to spare them that. So that was this was different. Another thing we see from this Rashi, though, is also the tremendous hashkacha pratis that Kadosh Baruch Hu has on us. Right here we have the shevet that Hashem's all the cheshbonus that go in. Hashem says, well, I know in the future it's going to be a gzera. There again, these people are going to die. I don't want these people to die with them. They didn't send in the ego. And therefore, I'm going to count them separately to prevent. Everything is all, you know, cheshbon out. And therefore, even though it seems, like we said, is a negative thing to separate shevet Levi from the klal, but again, Hashem saw, like we said, that here is different. And here, therefore, even though, you know, at the time, I mean, nobody knew it was going to be. So time and time, they might have in fact said, hey, this is not fair. Why should we be separate from the klal? We're special, but we don't want to. We want to be b'toch ami anochi yoshavas. I want to be with everybody else. Why are we separated? So they would have to have just said, gamzu latov. But it really was gamzu latov, because they might have saved their lives. But they just didn't see it at the time. That's Kashbarach HaLashkach HaPratis. I'd like to share with you an unbelievable story of Ashkach HaPratis that I saw a while ago. There was a family that came from Europe to America at the early 1920s, Limin Yanam. And they had a very rough, very poor, lived in Williamsburg. And they had a son, his name was Moshe, and he became very ill. So it was not just, you know, a little fever, he was like very ill. And the parents didn't know what to do, and so the mother was, you know, she was beside herself, well, what can I do for my son? So she heard, speaking to a neighbor, there's this doctor, children's doctor, supposed to be top of the line. So he's the address. So she decided she's even though she heard he's very, very expensive, but she doesn't have any money, but she won't do for her son, you know. So she calls the doctor, he comes in, he sees the matzav of the house, you know, how poor these people are, but okay, he goes, he looks at the child, checks him out, and says, listen, your son is very, very ill. And there is, however, hope. There is one, like a wonder drug, that is available, and I believe if he takes this medicine, he can be cured. But this is the only thing that'll do the trick. So she goes, okay, great, anything, what? So he says, okay. So he takes it out, he fills out, makes a prescription. He says, you can't get this in any drugstore either. It's a special drug. You have to go across town to this certain drugstore, and he tells her where it is. But there's only one problem. She says, what's the problem? He says, it's very, very expensive. So it's a wonder drug, and it's very costly. So she goes, okay, costly, I don't care. You know, my son's life, okay, who cares? He goes, okay, look, you do what you have to do, what you want to do, I'm just warning you. Fine. So he says, you know, it's quite a distance, you know, outside of town, but she says you can take a train, and it goes nearby, whatever. So he says, you know what, and I see your matzav, I'm not going to take any money, even though I always take money for these house calls, as I make my living, but I see you're very poor, I'm not going to take any money for the house call. So, thank you very much, doctor, and he leaves. So the woman says, okay, I got to go into action, you know, the son's dying, you know, he's like, matzav is critical. And she says, okay, I got to go. So she didn't have enough money to take the train. She's like, she couldn't take, she wanted to take the train much quicker and get there, but she didn't have enough money for even to the train to such a degree. So she went by foot, and she's running there as fast as she can to the other side of town to get to this drugstore. So finally she gets to the drugstore. She goes behind the desk, you know, the druggist, and she says, okay, and she hands him the prescription. So he looks at the prescription. Looks at her, you know, she doesn't look like some high class lady, you know, by any extent. So he says straight out, he says, lady, this is a very expensive drug. She goes, I know it is, I know, but I need it, my son's dying, and this is the doctor says the only thing that can save him, I must have it. So he says, no problem, I'm just telling you, it's a very expensive drug. And I can't, you know, give it to you on credit or whatever, because it's very costly for me too, the ingredients or whatever, and I can't just, you know, you're... So she says, okay, how much does it cost? So he says, for a little vial, a little tube, $45. Okay, now just to give you an idea, say $45, okay, at the end of the world, you know. Just to give you an idea, we're talking about the 1920s, okay? This woman, who she was used to work, okay, her salary was $3 a month. It's times 12, so her yearly salary is $36. And this little thing of medicine is $45. Okay, so this gives you a musug of what we're dealing with here. Okay, and so he told her $45. So she's like, but she said, oh, my son. So she's thinking, oh, what am I going to do? So she said, she had an idea. She says, do you need any help? You know, she goes, I clean floors, and I'm a great cleaner, and I can, you know, clean your pharmacy for you. You know, can I work for you? And I have to pay off, whatever. So he said, oh, you know, not a bad idea. He says, truth is, I had a woman that's a cleaner, and she quit on me just recently, and I need somebody. And fine, you'll come in the evenings, you know, to clean up, because she had a full-time job during the day, you know, she'd have to come in the evening. So it's fine. He says, let's make a contract out, because, you know, it has to be official. I don't want you to, you know, this is, again, very expensive medicine. And so he makes out a contract, and he writes that she's going to be working, whatever, two, three nights a week, you know, etc. And for how long to pay off for the medicine? He writes 2.5 years. He has to work for free for 2.5 years to pay off this medicine. She had no choice. Okay, it's to, and that's the other side of town, which she can't afford. She has to, after work, a full day's work, run to the other side of town to for 2.5 years to pay off for this little thing of medicine. Okay, but again, what's she going to do? It's her son's life. So she goes, no problem. Okay. So he says, okay, goes to the back, prepares the little vial and the test tube of the stuff, and the little like red, you know, red liquid, hands it to her, and says, I'm just warning you beforehand, this stuff tastes terrible, okay? So your son's not going to like it, but, you know, you have to give it to him little by little, and then and make him drink it, etc. And Bezrat Hashem, it should do the trick. Okay. So now he goes, okay, Baruch Hashem, I have the medicine. So now I got to get home, but time's ticking away. You know, his son, every minute is important. And again, she no money, of course, to take any trains or anything, so she has to go home. So he decided to save time and take a shortcut through Harlem. Okay, well, that wasn't a great idea. So she's running her guts out, and she's passing through this not great neighborhood, and all of a sudden she came in front of a wall. It was not made out of bricks, but out of flesh and blood. This huge Schwarze. Okay? He says, excuse me, ma'am, where do you think you're going? And she's like, I'm in a rush, I gotta go. He said, no, you're not going anywhere. She's like, what do you mean I'm not going anywhere? I have to go. My son is sick, I gotta get home. He goes, give me your money. She goes, have money. I don't have any money. I wish I had money. I have no money. I don't have any money. Let me go. I have to go. She goes, no. Give me your purse. So he snatches her purse. He looks in, he opens it up, and he shakes it out, all the contents on the floor. And sure enough, there's no money there. And she's not any. So he says, where are you hiding the money? So she says, I told you. I don't have any money. I'm a poor woman. And that. So he's getting very angry. And he sees in her hand this vial of red stuff. So he says, what's that you have in your hand? She's like, oh my gosh, anything but this, you know. And he's, what's that in your hand? So she's like, it's medicine. I told you my son's sick, I have to bring medicine. He says, you're lying to me. He says, that's rum. It's red rum. He says, give it to me. And she's like, no. So he grabs it from her hand, opens up the vial, and starts drinking it. And it tasted terrible, like, you know, the drug had said. So he's like, oh, gross. He spits all over her, the medicine on her dress. He takes things, throws it on the ground, smashes it to smithereens. And he says, ugh, and he leaves. Okay, now, is there any worse matzav than a person could possibly be in? Like, would you say a gumzu latope situation like that? Her son's dying. She paid, 2.5 years of work, she was mechayev herself for this medicine that she now does not have. And her son's dying, she has nothing to give him. That's it, you know. Is there anything worse, you know? Okay, but she got to do something. Yeah, what was she going to do? So she decides, no choice, runs back to the pharmacist. She goes back to the pharmacy, and she comes in, she's all... And the pharmacist looks at her and goes, what happened to you? So she's crying, and she says, you know, I'm not going to believe this. I got mugged on the way, and this Schwarze, and he took the medicine, and he threw it, and that's it. And, so he said, you know, I feel terrible. What can I do? I feel terrible. What can I do? So he goes, give me the contract. So the farmer says, excuse me, you know, I told you, I feel bad for you, but, you know, it's not my responsibility. You were mechayer yourself 2.5 years, and okay, you can't give the medicine anymore, and I feel bad, but you just give me the contract. So he gives her the contract, she takes it, she erases 2.5, and she writes in 5. She says, work for you for 5 years, give me the medicine. So he was like, whoa. Couldn't believe the mesiras nefesh of this woman. 5 years of work, you know. So he says, okay. So he's just about to go back to make the medicine. But he looks at her and he says, lady, he says, what's that guck, you know, on your dress? So she says, what do you think it is? He says, I told you, the guy that's the mugger, you know, he drank to someone's arm, he spit on me, and it's the stuff. So he looks at it, starts smelling, he goes, that was the medicine that he spit on you? And she goes, yeah, why? She goes, so he turns white like a ghost, and he goes, oh my gosh. She says, what? He says, I made a grave error. She says, what happened? He goes, that stuff I gave you was poison. So that I can smell it. That's poison. So he stops, he says, I know what happened. In my drawer when I was preparing, they have all these different powders and, you know, the chemicals. There are these two chemicals, one I had to put in. I put in the wrong one that had a similar name and it was on the other side of the drawer, and that's what I put in, and it was poison. She says, do you realize if your son would have drank this medicine, he would be dead? She says, whoa. So he says, he goes back, he prepares the good stuff, this time carefully, and he takes the contract, rips it up, and says, do me a favor, please, don't tell anybody what happened, I'll lose my license. Okay? You don't have to work for me, you don't have to come in, I'm riffing out of there, just don't tell anyone, do me a favor. No problem, we'll tell us all. You know? gives her the vial, comes home, takes it home, gives it to her son, Moshe, and Baruch Hashem, he survived. This Moshe turned out to be Moshe Sher, which was the president of the Agudas Yisrael for more than 30 years. He was Nifter in the late 90s. And, you know, he would comment, you know, I was saying over the story, you know, saved his life. He said, you know, I can't thank Hashem enough for sending this Shvarza, you know, to my mother. I mean, that was it. Imagine, you know, the gum. He said, how can you say gum's l'tov in a matzah like that? Meanwhile, that shvarza is the best thing that could possibly happen. Mamish saved his life. Pshuto k'mishmo. That's a shkacha prati. So, Bezrat Hashem, we take these two lessons that we learned tonight. That, of course, we saw the hashkacha pratis involved in our lives on a daily basis. And as we approach Matan Torah, we saw the importance of Tochami Anochi Yashavas, Ke'ish Echad, B'Lev Echad, the importance of loving our fellow Jew, having the tremendous Achdus, which we said is a prerequisite for Kabbalah Satorah, and we've rezoiched to a Emesa Kabbalah Satorah, which will lead us eventually, hopefully soon, to the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, Bimhira V'Yameinu.